The wonderful Wizard of Oz. We hear he is the Wizard of Wiz, if ever a Wiz there was. If ever or ever a Wiz there was, the Wizard of Oz is one because of the wonderful things he does.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
...2018. Hope and Chris finish the last episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. Luckily, dependable Dave Filoni and crew create Rebels with new characters, new places, and new adventures, thus keeping hope alive for this podcast. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars Rebels. In this episode, Kanan and Ezra venture into a hidden Jedi temple, where they both face new trials and encounter one of the greatest Jedi in the galaxy has ever known!
I didn't
warn you, I was going to like point to Yoda. Yoda! We're talking Path of the Jedi this week. Sorry, Chris, I was just like, hey, that'd be a great time for Yoda to say something. And then I was like, I didn't warn Chris, oh god!
Yeah, oh yeah, I've got some notes on that.
How are you doing this week?
What's up?
How are you doing this week?
I'm doing good.
Do anything fun?
Not really. I went to lunch today with Scott McGregor, bought him lunch for his birthday.
Yeah, it was his birthday. Happy belated birthday, Scott.
Oh my god, there's like four helicopters coming from all different directions out there. Hope it's not for me.
What do you do this time? Yoda, what'd you do this time?
I swear, I've only been on Facebook. Oh, no, they're going away. I think I'm safe.
Okay. Well, I had a good week. You know that stupid-ass ear infection I've been dealing with fucking 7 months now?
Still going?
Yeah, but I finally... Well, my doctor sucked to the point where I had to talk to his... He sucked so bad I had to talk to his office manager, and apparently I wasn't the only person who had really sucky things with him. So they put me on a new doctor, and I'm finally making progress, and they're like, you're now going from chronic to not chronic, and we're working towards that. And I was like, hooray, no more chronic ear infections. We'll see how this goes. I went today, and I go back on Wednesday, and I'm hoping I'm finally on the tail end of this god-awful 7-month trial of ear infections. But... So that's good news for me, because I'm tired of feeling like I'm dying inside of my head. But
come on.
Huh?
What kind of attitude is that?
Okay, I'll trade you. Do you remember how terribly sick I was back in August? It was awful, Chris. I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemies. All, like, none of them. Oh, but I did. I made sure to note it. I started watching the chronological Watch of Star Wars with my stepmom.
Ah, yeah.
We started with episode 1.
That means you gotta start. You're landing hard and rough.
Yeah, and
it's uphill. It's uphill from there.
I briefed her. I was like, just so you know, like episode 1 is considered like the worst of the Star Wars movies. And so we were watching it, and you know, like, she doesn't have any, like, she saw A New Hope, like, years ago.
Right.
And that's, like her only point of reference from, like, years and years and years ago. And so it was kind of fun watching her watch this, because she was, like, laughing at things like Jar Jar, because she has no, like, she knows roughly that about Jar Jar Binks is not a great character just from pop culture. But she had never, like, experienced him in any way, shape, or form. So, like, it was fun watching her, like, laugh at Jar Jar's stuff and, like, laughing at some of the jokes. And I was like, cool. But right in the middle of it, when they're going, you know how it's, like, awesome kind of, like, fun action in the first half, action in the third half, but they drop bullshit politics for 30 minutes.
And then it slows way down.
Yeah, the stuff that we talked about in our commentary. In the middle of the 30-minute bullshit politics in the middle, Lynn just looks at me and goes, I don't know if it's the wooden acting or the terrible script. And I looked at her and I'm like, it's both, Lynn. It's both.
Yeah, why not both? It doesn't just have to be one. or the other.
Yeah. But we started that, and I have to think, because, like, I'm going to show her the Clone Wars movie, and I'm going to show her, like, a handful of episodes of Clone Wars. I'm trying to pick, like, what episodes to do, because I know I'm going to do the Saul Guerrera arc, because he shows up on Rogue One. So I already know I'm going to do Saul Guerrera. And I would like to do a couple clone episodes, so, like, when she watches Order 66, it would be good. But
well,
I don't.
I mean, you should definitely do the Umbara arc because it's
your favorite.
And I was
thinking about that, but one of the reasons that makes Umbara so good is because of earlier episodes, like with Cut LaQuane and stuff. But I'm really only trying to pick like maybe three arcs.
She's a Star Trek fan, so she'll pick up on this.
That's my mom. We're talking about stepmom.
Oh.
I'm watching it with Lynn, my stepmom. Yeah, my mom loves Star Wars, but stepmom is experiencing Star Wars really for the first time. So, it's definitely different.
You don't have past notes on all the episodes to
I'm thinking also about doing, I'm going to have to do some Maul stuff too, because Maul comes back in Rogue One. Not Rogue One, Solo. But then I was like, but if I do that, then I'm going to have to do some Rebels. And I was like, oh, God. So I'm trying to figure out what the best way of doing this, Chris. And any suggestion?
I would have to go over my notes, but, like, I almost wouldn't even show her the Clone Wars movie.
I want to show her the Clone Wars movie because it introduces Ahsoka.
Yeah, it does.
And
but
one
it's
of
not
my pet peeves is like when everyone talks about like they make these like beautiful mon collages of like all the theatrical releases. They never have fucking Clone Wars, and it pisses me the fuck off.
Just because it was, you know, like I went there with a friend and he fell asleep about halfway through it.
Yeah.
I mean, I enjoyed it, but as far as like, you know, and then it does technically introduce Ahsoka, but it's not the best Ahsoka, you know, it's not, I mean, and so then it's like, what form of, you know, unless you're going to go through the whole show, you know, maybe you can get her hooked on Clone Wars and she'll just watch it. You can say, Mom, we have a whole tutorial. It's called Jay Guys and Jedi and Lynn or what, you know, whatever you call her.
I call her Lynn.
Step mammy.
She's my step ma'am.
Say, you know, my friend Chris and I made a whole tutorial and it's very classy, and it'll walk you all the way through Clone Wars.
So I kind
and you'll
of
learn
like,
and you'll learn all sorts of things about me.
I kind of like at the end of it, like once we get through all of them, I wouldn't mind having her on the show too, so I can have both my moms at some point on the show.
Yeah.
And just to see, like, you've experienced
fam
Star Damley. Wars. What?
Get the whole fam Damley. We've had your dad. We've had your dad talking in the background, at least.
That was my stepdad.
Stepdad.
I know. I'm the crazy person with a fucking crazy family. Yeah, that.
That's everyone, Hope. That's everyone.
Well, except for my dad, because my dad doesn't like any kind of science fiction in any way, shape, or form.
Oh.
But if you want somebody to talk wrestling, my dad's there.
Well, we do have a wrestling podcast. We
do have a wrestling podcast, and he is there for it. So, yeah. It'll be fun, but. So, Path of the Jedi.
Path of the Jedi.
I do need to say something up front. So, I'm going to call a spoiler warning now, everybody. So, when I was doing this episode, and I was, like, doing notes and, like, trying to make my points and stuff like that, there's just no way I could avoid talking about some Season 4 stuff in this episode, because I wanted to set it up now. And also part of the reason is we went into this show wanting to look at, like, Rebels as a whole and how things in earlier seasons set up things for later seasons. So there is an episode in Season 4 called The World Between Worlds that directly ties into this episode, and I personally felt like I couldn't avoid it because I wanted to talk about it and how it's early set up and everything. So I'm giving you a spoiler warning now. If you're listening to the show while watching Rebels for the first time, this will have season 4 spoilers because I didn't want to avoid it. So this is your spoiler warning now. Cool?
Sure. It's cool with me. I've seen it, the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, we just talked about the, like, we don't want to talk too much about future stuff, but Ezra's in the world between worlds in this episode. He's in it. And I was like, I can't not talk about this because it's big and he just doesn't know how big it is. I couldn't do it, Chris. I tried. I tried really hard.
Oh, you're not spoiling too bad. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Path of the Jedi is the 10th episode of Star Wars Rebels, and it was released on January 15th, 2015. So happy new year, 2015! And it was written by Charles Murray and directed by Dave Filoni. Some extra information for you. On December 15th, 2014, TV Guide revealed that Path of the Jedi would feature an appearance by Jedi Master Yoda as a disembodied voice. The character's voice was provided by Frank Oz. I just said Frank Ars.
Ars. Frank Ars.
Ars. Frank Ars. Was provided by Frank Oz, who starred as Yoda. In bringing Yoda on to Star Wars Rebels, the show executive producer Dave Filoni stated that maintaining continuity with the official Star Wars canon was an important consideration. Specifically, Yoda was in hiding on Dagobah during the time period in which the show was set. Having Yoda speak to a character from afar helped ensure that audience did not think that he had left Dagobah. The TV Guide also revealed that there would be an homage to past Yoda stories, including The Empire Strikes Back and the final episodes of Clone Wars. One such homage was the lights of the Force that helped guide Ezra Bridger through the Jedi Temple. Yoda himself encountered similar lights on Dagobah in the episode Voices, the 11th episode of the final season of Clone Wars. Well, I guess not final anymore. Next, the working title for this episode was Enlightenment. I can't read today!
Ezra's just an entitled millennial just thinking that he just should just get his lightsaber like it was a participation trophy or something.
God, I'm just going to walk in this temple and Kanan's like, I'm just going to leave you in this temple. The working title for this episode was Enlightenment. I will say I usually write my episodes the day of my art outline, so they're really fresh in my mind. I did this like 2 to 3 days ago because I have like work and a baby shower and shit to go to. So I haven't read my notes in like 3 days, so I don't remember anything I wrote. At the beginning of the episode, when Ezra was late for Jedi practice, what he and Sabine were doing were detailed in an earlier version of the script, before it was cut for time. It became evident by the end of the season. Okay, so that's what it said on StarWars.com. I think this is referring to them painting the TIE fighter that they stole, but it was never, like, confirmed. But I think they're painting the TIE fighter at the time. An earlier version of the story included Old Joe and Visago being involved in Ezra's search for the Kyber crystals, but as the spiritual core of the episode expanded, the script was streamlined to focus on the events within the temple. Seen on the frozen grounds outside the Jedi Temple was ancient symbols depicting the entwined nature of the light and the dark sides. These icons have been seen in other places such as Mortis and Ilum in Clone Wars. The ancient script seen etched in the walls of the Jedi Temple is derived from a Ralph McQuarrie illustration of ancient Yavin Temple that he painted for the Illustrated Star Wars Universe, a book released in 1995. This is the first appearance of the World Between Worlds, the spiritual realm where Ezra receives his Kyber crystal. This place will not be detailed until season 4. You hear my pug in the background yelling? She's all angry because she's like, I have dementia. Bark. Anyway. In Rebels Recon, Dave Filoni said that he had a long debate about putting a Jedi temple on the planet that Ezra happened to be on, but he says they chose that because of the bigger picture had yet to be revealed.
Hey, you want to hear how out of it I am? I thought I just figured out you said your pug and not your porg.
Oh, she could be a porg.
You hear my porg in the background?
You hear my porg in the background?
He thinks he's a porg. She thinks she's a porg now.
Yeah, she barks like that. When Lucy barks, she just goes, blah!
Keep her away from the lightsabers.
So, but Dave Filoni says that he chose this location on Lothal for a bigger picture that they had yet to reveal. Again, they didn't specify what that meant. I took this as being the world between worlds. But for the Rebels Recon episode for World Between Worlds, they do touch back on this episode, so I'm fairly sure this is what he's referring to. And continuing from Rebels Recon, Pablo Hidalgo said that not all Jedi trials are the same. They're customized for the Jedi in question. They also compared the temple being customized for Ezra's quest similar to the cave on Dagobah, customizing the vision for Luke in the original trilogy. Filoni also said it's fun to see a character in Star Wars, like Ezra, having no idea who Yoda is. And I never thought about that before. Because we're just so used to everyone's like, oh, everyone knows Yoda, but that's true. Ezra's like, who the fuck are you, dude? I don't know.
Yeah, he's like, hey, friendly voice. He probably pictures him like 7 feet tall.
Are you an angel?
Oh, Jesus.
And finally, Filoni also fanboyed a little bit about working with Frank Oz, and he was excited to create Yoda dialogue with him. You know who also is fanboying over Yoda and Frank Oz?
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
Hi, Yoda.
Hello.
You know, this isn't our official question, but what'd you think of that Ezra kid?
Why the blue hair? Marge Simpson, is he?
We talked last week. He officially has black hair, and I'm still not over that yet.
Whatevs.
All right, Yoda. I'm going to give you your official question now. It's from Mr. Paul C. Kelly. Did you ever...
again.
Huh?
Again with the Paul C. Kelly.
Yay! Don't knock Paul C. Kelly. He's been giving us all the
questions. Questions he has. Much information Paul C. Kelly has not.
What if he's your stalker and he's just watching you going, oh yeah.
Dude, we'll put on a show.
Ugh. I'm sorry, Paul. I apologize now. All right, your question. Did you ever have to whack Obi-Wan on the head with your cane like you do for Luke and R2? Or do you have any other stories where you had to whack somebody over the head with your cane?
Whack them all over the head. Oh, whacked Obi-Wan? Qui-Gon, yes, yes. Qui-Gon, large nose. Whack! Right in the smeller.
Who's your
Even little Anakin felt Yoda's stick.
What about wet blanket Wendy?
What? Sometimes stick, sometimes boot to the head.
Did he ever turn and throw
a wet blanket?
Did he ever turn and throw a wet blanket back on you? Just like,
Had to confiscate wet blanket all the time. Oh, how little Windu would cry.
Aww, you make his eyes wet.
But that would moisten blanket. Now we know how the blanket got wet. Boot to the head.
I was just imagining, like, Yoda took my blanket. And you just shove it in his face like, get wet, kid.
Took your blanket.
All right, Yoda, thank you. We'll see you next week. Actually, we'll probably see you in X3. Did I write you any lines? I told myself I was going to write you lines, but I don't think I actually did.
Yeah, that's okay. I'm sure he'll be back.
I guess I can do my best Yoda impression, so.
whack on.
This is going to be fun. I literally don't remember any of my notes. Here we go!
Ready, this should be smooth as silk. Hope I'm counting on it.
I'm already doing so well between entitlement and Frank R's. I'm doing great tonight, Chris. Great.
Thought you had a stroke right in the middle of saying Frank Oz's name. It was scary.
Nope. I got a story about that. Because I went to the doctor today, and they had to take my blood pressure. And so they were taking my blood. Like, I guess it's because I had fallen asleep in the waiting room. Because I was super tired today, so I fell asleep in the waiting room. So when they called my name, I, like, snapped awake, and, like, I hurried back there. And so the first thing they did was they took my blood pressure. I guess, like, either the machine just read it wrong, because the lady took it off, and she had read it, and she was like, "Oh, do you have a history of high blood pressure?" And I was like, "Not that I know of." She goes, "Okay, well, I'll be right back." And I was like, "Okay, bye."
Alarms start going up.
She came back with a different machine. She took my blood pressure, and she read it, and she was like, "Oh, that's much better." And I was like, "Why?" And she's like, "The first one was so high, you were about to have a stroke." And I was like, "Oh,
jeez."
Thanks for reading that for me.
Last time I got my blood pressure taken was at work, and that'll kill you. You have your detectors for it. It went off. Anyway, it's not CO2. Carbon monoxide. CO. And our carbon monoxide alarm went off. And when it does, it automatically hooks to the fire department, who sends an ambulance. So, you know, they came in, and it turned out it wasn't a problem, but the ambulance driver had to take all of our blood pressure, and I had the best blood pressure of everybody at work.
Yeah.
This one guy who was, he reminds me actually of Rocket Raccoon. When she's strapping him out, he's just like, "I'm just going to tell you right now, it's going to be shockingly high." And she was just like, "Oh my God." And he's like, "Yeah, I'm aware.
All right, so Act 1.
Act 1.
The episode opens with Kanan looking for Ezra, and the kid is running late, running like a madman back to the ghost. And Ezra bursts into Kanan's room like, "I'm so sorry, I was off doing with things with Sabine that was cut for a storyline from this episode, but I guess we'll figure it out later. I'm sorry." And Kanan's a bit miffed, but it's from worry, since Ezra played with the dark side a bit last week. And Kanan says that Ezra is ready for a test, a real test, to see if he's supposed to be a Jedi. And they go back and forth between, "I thought I was a Jedi," and Kanan going, "I said you could be a Jedi," and how they bicker about how they're both undisciplined and reckless and blah. And Ezra wants a chance at a test, and Kanan tells him to prep the Phantom. Hera comes up to Space Dad and drops some Space Mom encouragement that Kanan is a good teacher and she believes in him and Ezra because she's the best Space Mom ever. And Kanan and Ezra hop into the Phantom and take off. Kanan sits with his Padawan and gives him a history lesson about how there used to be Jedi temples all over the galaxy, but the Empire has destroyed a lot of them. Kanan wants Ezra to meditate and try to find a temple. Ezra doubts himself, but Kanan tells him to trust himself and the Force. Asking if Kanan took this test too, Kanan said that everything was different back then. But when Ezra says that they just need to trust the Force then, Kanan looks so proud, like a proud daddy of his little Padawan son finally catching on to shit. Focusing, Ezra senses a massive stone with a tunnel and a star in the middle of it. It's a Jedi temple right there on the Uthal, and he guides them to it. Just in time for Kanan to turn off the autopilot, because his holocron said that there was a temple on Lothal, and Kanan knew about it the entire time. He just wanted Ezra to find it all by himself, because Kanan wasn't sure if there was a temple for Ezra, but it makes sense because it's Ezra's home, and they need to figure out how to get inside, since the Empire has records of the Jedi temples, and they need to get inside fast because the Empire might know about the Lothal temple and they might have surveillance around it. While Kanan meditates, Ezra looks for a way in, but he can't find an opening. And Kanan tells him not to look with his eyes, but to feel with the Force. And Ezra senses that the temple doesn't want just Ezra, but both Ezra and Kanan have to go in together. So they come together in focus, and the temple rises up and reveals a door. And together, they go inside the temple. What'd you think of Act 1?
I'm trying to think of the term or word you were using last time for things being very story-like.
Ezra having protagonist-itis?
Yeah, there's a little protagonist-itis, or, you know, just sort of story trope. stuff going on in this, especially within the Star Wars. I'm not saying this is a criticism. Like visually, it's not, I like the Northern Lights just as they're getting to the Jedi Temple or whatever lights they would be called on Lothal, but they look like the Northern Lights.
Yo, and I had a note about that too. I think this is the only time we ever see a cold part of the planet, and it's like ice and snowy. So I'm wondering if they're like on towards one of the ice caps.
Towards one of the northern poles. It doesn't seem like they traveled that long, but there could have been like a time passage in this that we didn't see or something. But the music's nice. It has a lot of the Force theme in it in this one, but even a lot of the like incidental music that's non right off of John Williams is really nice in this one. But it's just kind of within Star Wars and a little bit within now starting with Rebels. This is sort of formulaic, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Kanan being a little bit like, you know, mad at Ezra and Ezra not really getting what's going on and the story part of it that was buggy, it's just like, oh, the temple's right here on Lothal. And you know, as we go on, that becomes cooler. But in the context of right now, it's just sort of like, oh, it's just sort of easy. Because I'm thinking, like, why are they taking a ride just so they're away from the ghosts to, like, for Ezra to... And it's like, no, Kanan already knew and was taking them there.
I actually really like that moment because it's like Ezra's using his power and he's like, I can sense it. There's a star. And Kanan's like, I know. Turning off the autopilot. Let's go. I knew the whole time. I had to actually laugh at him.
Yeah.
But I like that they also acknowledged it. Like Kanan even says, like, yeah, I was surprised to see that there was a temple here too. Like they at least acknowledged that it was easy. It
saves
a
lot of time. Yeah, it sure saves a lot of time.
So.
We could tackle this problem right now.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's a minor quibble. That's just sort of... But that's about all I got for part one.
Well, for me, I should probably put down my cross-stitching. Because I can't read and cross-stitch at the same time. In the opening scene when Ezra's running late, I like that Kanan was a bit miffed at the beginning. But... Because, like, I liked it because it all came from a place of worry. It's not like, oh, Ezra's always late, so I'm mad at him. It's, he's worried because last episode we saw the dark side take over Ezra, and, like, he passed out. So, I did like that they, like, clarified that it wasn't like, oh, you're late again. It's like, you're late, but it's because I'm worried about you because I'm your space dad. I also just continue to love what they're doing in this these earlier episodes with Kanan.
Do you think like the space dad, like him, like having a little experience with the dark side, is like finding your space son smoking a space cigarette or something?
I think having a problem with the dark side is more worse than smoking space cigarettes. Because then he can just stick a space nicotine patch on his forehead and be fine.
I guess, yeah. There's no nicotine patch for the dark side.
If so, Maul would have been like, give me all of them. Something I do really love in these earlier episodes of Kanan is that he is still doubting himself as a teacher. And it's not like, because we saw in Rise of the Old Masters, like, he committed to Ezra. He's like, I'm going to be your teacher. I will teach you how to do this. We will do it together, and we'll figure it out together. But last week, we saw how really scared Kanan was, because Ezra had that brush with the dark side. And what I liked about that is Kanan realized how unprepared he was as a teacher. And he had, like... I'm sure he didn't even think about, like, preparing Ezra that soon for the dark side. And I like that he had that moment of, oh, shit, I don't know what to do. Oh, God. And my Padawan's summoning a big monster. Oh, my God. So I like that, like, it's carrying over into this week of him just going, I didn't prepare you. I wasn't prepared. I'm still not prepared for this, but we're still going to fucking figure it out together. So I like that. And my last note with that, since you're not saying anything.
Oh.
I wasn't sure I was leaving you an opening in case you wanted to say anything. Anything?
No, not really.
Okay. But at the same time, to follow up with that, I like continuing to see what a good teacher Kanan is. Because Kanan was raised by the Jedi and Coruscant and by the old Jedi Order, and it was very structured and dogmatic, and we've talked about it before about how that was inherently flawed and stuff. But Kanan is being very flexible with Ezra. He understands that this isn't normal. There's no more Jedi to lead him. He is having to figure this out. And so unlike when everything was super structured for him and wasn't working, he is looking at Ezra and going, okay, I need to figure out what's best for him to learn. And we've seen that before when he grabs Ezra and he's like, we're learning how to do this right now before we die. Let's go. And I liked watching Kanan continue to grow as a teacher because he knows he has to be flexible with Ezra, which is a sign that he's a really good teacher.
Well, yeah. I mean, everybody knows Kanan's going to be a good teacher.
Yeah.
But except for Kanan.
I know.
So that's, I mean, I think that's, I think that's almost kind of part of being a good teacher is having some self-doubt, you know? I think that's almost like was a lot of the Jedi's weakness when they were a big force was they were way too overconfident in everything that they were doing in their process and everything.
Yeah. I mean, hell, I was just watching episode 1 last night and just watching Mace Windu go, you can't train the boy, Qui-Gon. Yep. He's too old. The rules don't allow it. And Qui-Gon goes, I'm not going to use your approval to train the boy. I'm going to fucking do it anyway. And they're like, you can't do that, Qui-Gon. And then after Qui-Gon died, they were like, Obi-Wan, he's too old. You can't do it. And Obi-Wan's like, I'm going to do it fucking anyway. So, yeah, I mean, that was really a big problem of the Jedi, as we call it, Jedi bullshit. They were so wrapped up in their own Jedi bullshit.
Yeah, and they were very confident of their bullshit, too.
Yeah. So, my next note is just Space Mom Hera is the best.
Well, you can tell when they're... later on in there, you can tell when she and Kanan are talking that they just, like, he tells her everything.
Yeah, and when we saw it last time, like, after Ezra had a brush with the dark side, he looks right at her and goes, we need to talk, but we never got their talk, so you can only assume that it was this test.
Yeah, yeah.
So he really does tell her everything. Oh, there's, I just love her. I love them both. As I said before, there's some really nice animation on the cold part of the planet. We've yet to see Lothal cold. Like, you can see their breaths when they're talking, and the entire area is just rendered very beautifully, like, how the ice is on certain places and stuff. But I also noticed, as I was reading it, I remembered, there's really no ice on the temple. It's only in the surrounding area, so I'm wondering if it's, like, extra warm there with the Force that Force kept the ice warm. From being on it. I don't know. I just realized that.
It's got Yoda's love to keep it warm.
That's what you call it. And my last note is we've seen a similar arc before in the kids' arc in Clone Wars where they were off going to find their kyber crystals. And I was seeing a lot of little similarities between the kids' arc and this. And
oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Almost like a parallel, actually.
But it's same, but it's different. Because, like, with the kids' arc in Clone Wars, because it was really only the first episode, because everything else that happened afterwards was, like, circuses and Hondo. Circuses and Hondo, which is, like, the perfect explanation of Hondo ever. Hondo in the circus. But for that one first episode where they were all getting their kyber crystals, there was a lot of similarities, but there was also a lot of differences. Because they were always guided by Ahsoka, and Yoda was there, too, just like in this arc. But in that first episode, I never really got the feeling that the kids were ever really, truly in danger. Because, like, if they ever failed, you know, Yoda would just, like, go in there and, like, pull them out and stuff. So I they presented this, like, kind of danger and these illusions, but I never felt like they were ever truly in danger. Here, I feel like Kanan and Ezra are actually in danger. And I'm saying this now because I don't have a note for this, and so I'm just going to go for it. Because I think a big part of it is they don't really have a guide until Yoda shows up in Act 3. And so
it's also different for everybody, and the times are different now. They are in danger just by existing.
Yeah.
Or so, and more so than when, you know, when Yoda brought those group of kids in, the Jedi, you know, the Jedi were only pariahs for a very short period of time before they got wiped out, like hours, really, you know. So it's for the most part, you know, for most of them got wiped out right away. But before that, they weren't totally, you know, there were rumblings of them being seen as outcasts and pariahs and enemies of the people. But, you know, nowadays, like a Jedi, like, is not just a rare and weird thing, but wanted by the Empire. And like, you could get a nice reward for turning in a Jedi or, you know, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
It's a lot more dangerous and loaded to be a Jedi at this point in the Star Wars universe.
But with that, like, they also set up in this first act that the Empire could be watching this temple. So it kind of gives, like, a time limit feel to it. Like a feeling that at any moment, like, the Empire might show up, which helps sell the illusion of the Grand Inquisitor being there.
But also, you're getting ahead of yourself.
I know, but I don't have this point written down. So that's why I'm saying it now. Before I forget it. But there's also the whole feeling of, unlike the kids arc in Clone Wars, Ahsoka and Yoda were there in case something that like happened to the kids so they could save them. There's no one here to save Kanan or Ezra. And the thing is that Kanan has already stated he is not a full Jedi. So he really doesn't know what he's doing either, and neither do Ezra. So there's a whole thing of like, we're both going into this very unprepared. Let's go.
Yep, winging it.
So, but that's why it's also so nice.
That's kind of like the new way of dealing with the Force, the better way of dealing with the Force.
I was just about the same thing. That's why I think that these two are like so much better Jedi than the ones that we saw in the Clone Wars, because they are fucking flat out trusting the Force. They have no guidelines, so they're like, we are literally just going to trust the Force and wish for the best. Let's go.
Yep.
So that's what I like about these. And I know I got ahead a little bit, but I didn't have that specific point written down. And if I do, I forgot. So, I wrote this like 3 days ago. Yay. But that's all I have for Act 1. Did you have anything else?
No, not really.
All right.
Act 2. Most of the stuff happens here in Act 2, I think.
Yeah. Where did I break
it? Well, the action stuff anyway.
Yeah, I think I broke up the visions. Like as a part one and a part two. There was a very clear screen wipe and I was like, cool. So, Act 2. Keeping their focus going into the temple, Ezra gets spooked, seeing a skeleton. Thus, he loses his focus and the temple closes on them. And Kanan judges him with a very long, judgy dad look. But the skeletons actually have significance. They're Jedi masters whose Padawans never returned from the temple. So now, Kanan will wait and let Ezra go in alone. And Ezra freaks out because he doesn't want to go in alone. But Kanan sends him off looking for nothing and everything. And the door closes behind Ezra. In the temple, Ezra gets to a crossroads and starts to eeny, meeny, miny, mo on which way to go. But then, Kanan appears. And to note, you hear the woo, 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 woo of the Force behind him when Kanan shows up to lead the way. And Kanan runs ahead, and Ezra struggles to keep up with him. But when Kanan rounds a corner, Ezra hears his master yell. And there, he sees Kanan on his knees in front of Mabu, the Grand Inquisitor, a.k.a. Mr. Grande. My boy. My son. Not my son, that's gross. My husband. Anyway, his Vandal. And Grande says that he sensed them at the temple and he came. And Kanan says that he'll die before he'll let Grande have the boy. So Ezra watches on as Kanan and Grande fight. And it's actually a really cool fight. But very suddenly the fight ends as Grande stabs Kanan and kills him. And Ezra is shook watching his father figure die. And he tries to use Kanan's lightsaber, but it won't work for him and it breaks apart in his hands. And Ezra is helpless as Grande tries to attack him. And Ezra flounders away, but he falls off a cliff and he free falls through the darkness. But he lands in the ghost, having fell out of his bed. And Ezra stands outside the door of the meeting area He goes out into the hallway. I forgot to say that. He goes out into the hallway, and then he goes to the door of their meeting area, where the rest of the ghost crew is talking about Ezra's progress. And they're all talking shit about my blueberry, because Zeb wants his space back. Sabine pities Ezra, calling him a little kid. And Hera's just using Ezra because he's useful. And the blueberry has his feelings hurt. But it lasts about a moment until Ezra realizes this has to be a vision. He is still in the Jedi Temple. And then Grande shows up and he slaughters the ghost crew right in front of Ezra. And Ezra panics, holy shit, it's a scary moment. And I completely forgot about that watching this show. And Grande starts stalking Ezra through the ghost like a sexy horror movie monster. And Ezra falls through the door again. And again, he plummets through the darkness. But this time, he lands in the temple. And Ezra starts panicking because he's not sure if Kanan is actually dead or not. And is this real life? Or is this just fantasy? He's caught in the Force visions. No escape from reality. All right. And finally, Ezra dramatically throws himself on the ground, going, either way, I'm alone forever. Woe is me. But then, Ezra realizes he's been alone before. It's not new. He knows how to be alone. And he figured out then, and he's going to figure it out now. And he knows how to keep on surviving. And then, Grande walks out of the door like, aw, that was cute, Scarlett O'Hara, but I'm still gonna kill you. And where Ezra thought all that before was an illusion, this Grande grabs his face and can touch him. So this shit is real now! And then there's a scream wipe, so I'm calling that the end of Act 2. What do you think of Act 2, Chris?
That's where I called it, too.
Awesome!
It was okay.
I have more...
I thought the dead masters all waiting for their Padawans that are never gonna come out were, that was a pretty creepy idea when you think about how long they probably had to sit there and just die. And I didn't know that was a rule, but that was pretty cool and creepy. You got some Grande porn in here. This is total Grande porn for Hope.
Oh, catnip. You know, I don't even really have that many Grande notes, though.
But just, like, story-wise, it was not bad. It was a nice battle. It's bits and pieces of all things we've sort of seen before, though, you know, so it's not especially like fresh. It's just got its own sort of twist for Ezra and Kanan on it, which is cool because there's a, you know, it's a consistent, it's a little different, but it wasn't mind-bendingly different. You know what I mean? I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to say.
I kind of feel like that way too. Like, it's all really good, but it's all kind of like a little bit predictable.
It's very. It's playing out in like the predictable Star Wars manner. Like,
I would actually say if you hadn't have seen the kids arc, this would probably seem really new. But a lot of the things that are playing in Ezra's vision played out in the kids arc. A lot of like very similar things. So, it's a lot of, like, the same stuff we've seen again, but it's tailored towards Ezra, which also I think is nice because Pablo Hidalgo had been saying in Rebels Recon that every trial is catered to the Padawan in question. So this is tailored to Ezra. It's a lot of the same things, I'm sure, while it's similar to what we saw in the kids arc, it's all been, like, tuned to Ezra. So that, in that way, it's nice. But at the same time, it's all stuff we've also seen before because we watched Clone Wars.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's variations of Luke in the tree, you know, and stuff like that. And stuff we've seen with Rey a little bit and with her vision a little bit, you know. So I think maybe it was in the last few episodes when I first watched this that I was sort of going like, okay, this is where we're, you know, hitting a little more of that form of Rebels. Rebels, I think, we'll probably have a few more episodes like this in a row coming up here and there that just sort of follow, you know, they follow the general Star Wars themes that have been established in the movies and in Clone Wars and just sort of follow the pattern of the heist story, you know, and the curses, the rebels got away again story. Although that's not really what this one is, but this one is a different sort of pattern.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of a Filoni pattern than than anything. The Filoni pattern, the Filoni configuration.
But that's all you got for Act Two?
That's all I really got for this one. Yeah.
Wow. I wrote more notes than I remembered. Here we go. I don't remember all of them. Let's do this.
Oh yeah, you got a good amount here.
All right, so.
All right, let's see what you got, Hope.
Yeah, we'll see.
I love the last. That'll be a surprise for both of us.
I know. I remember this one. I love the last thing that Kanan says to Ezra before they enter the temple. He was like, "Make sure you don't lose focus so the temple doesn't close on us." And then Ezra screams at the skeleton, and the temple closes. Kanan just slowly turns, like as it's closing, you see about like. Ezra's face and he's wincing, and Kanan just crosses his arms and just looks at Ezra. Doesn't say anything, but just crosses his arms and just looks at Ezra. And Ezra just looks at him like, "Sorry, Dad." It was a very funny moment because Kanan just has this look of like, "Oh, I knew that was going to happen, son." It was just a really funny moment. I started thinking, man, this temple is fucking vicious. Because at first when I thought I saw the Dead Masters and I just got the idea of like with the Dead Masters, I was like, well, after a week passed and their Padawan's not going back, they should have just left. But then I realized they needed a master and a Padawan to open the temple. So without their Padawan, they probably couldn't open the temple. So the temple was just like, fuck you, you're trapped here forever too.
Yeah, but there should only be one Dead Master that way, or at least. Well, it depends on how long it is between masters coming in, because, like, all right, your Padawan didn't come in. You just wait till the next group come in. You run out the door when they open it up.
Yeah. But then, like, it kind of gave me the idea of, like, it's so weird because we've talked about, like, the possibilities of, like, kyber crystals almost having, like a little bit of sentience to them. And things with the Force having a bit of sentience. And it kind of goes back to the cosmic Force of, like, the will of the Force. Like, not the everyday living Force that we see, but, like, the cosmic Force. And it almost being, like, a living thing that's, like, dictating everything. And that's what I was kind of thinking about this temple. Because, like, this temple willed itself to close because it needed both of them. And it even told Ezra, like, it's not just Ezra that goes in. Both Kanan and Ezra has to go in. And Ezra even says, the temple wants both of us to go in. Like, it's a living thing talking to him. So it's kind of cool thinking of, like, these very Force-like things being almost sentient. It's just kind of, like, a cool, like, thing of the cosmic Force, like, almost talking to them that way.
Yeah.
So, I don't think I ever said my first connection to the kids arc in Act 1. The first one I saw was all the Padawans in both episodes have to find ways to get to the Eighth Temple by going through the Force. And then the second connection I saw with the kids arc was temples are dangerous and they shouldn't let tiny children run around inside them.
Yeah, the Force is dangerous. It's not like joining the Elks Club where they blindfold you or like a Halloween party where they like put your hand in spaghetti when you're blindfolded and say it's guts. It's like the real thing. So
yeah,
I guess, you know, if everybody that went through passed, it wouldn't have any meaning, you know. And maybe there were some seriously flawed Padawans that went in and just, yeah, kind of, I don't know if I want to say they deserve not to come out, but it was probably better.
Yeah.
I don't know why that didn't happen for Anakin, but...
Yeah, apparently I was reading that Obi-Wan took Anakin to Ilum on his own. Like, he wasn't a part of a gathering like we saw. Like, it was just the two of them that went. So that's kind of cool, because, like, it was tailored specifically to Anakin then. And I think it would have been cool to see, like, what Anakin saw when he went.
It was pretty intense, I would gotta imagine.
Yeah, be like, "Annie, it's me, Shmi, your mom. Why?" So, I need some catchy music, because this is the second time I did this. I've done this. Actually, I've done it a few times, but this week in Things I Missed, the first time I watched Rebels, So Ezra, when he's having to pick a path, he says a little rhyme, which is Lothrat, Lothcat, Lothwolf, run, pick a path, and all is done. And it's his like version of Eeny, Meeny, Miny, Moe. And I gasped when he said that because I remember that little rhyme from season 4. And it was very prominent in the trailers. Like when they dropped, it was either the first trailer or the mid-season trailer for season 4. But it's going through the cave and you're seeing all like the different pictures and stuff. And Ezra's going, Lothcat, Lothwolf, Lothrat, run. Pick a path and all is done. Anybody saying it almost like it's a chant? And I remember that from season 4. I forgot that it was this early on in season 1. Like, I thought it was something they wrote for that. So I had a moment when he said that and I was like, oh, it's the season 4 thing. Oh my god. So I had that moment. So, there's a lot of nice little audio cues in this episode too. Like when Kanan runs up to Ezra at the crossway in the paths, you hear the woo 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 of the Force when Kanan shows up, and it's just really nice because like Ezra doesn't know, but me as a watcher is going, that's a Vision.
Now that's a Vision.
That's a Vision. Yeah, because I was just like, oh, that Kanan's not real. But, like, it's also one of those things, like, it'd be very easy for, like, an audience member to miss that. So you're just like, oh, Kanan's there. But he's not. My next note is when Kanan is fighting the Inquisitor, Force Vision Kanan fights way better than real Kanan.
Yeah, you gotta put on a real show in Force Vision land.
Yeah. Talking about Ezra's trial being tailored to him, it makes sense that losing his new family is Ezra's greatest fear because he doesn't want to be alone again. And he always talks about how fine he is being alone, but now that, like, this far in the season, we've seen that Ezra has really grown a lot too by being with them, and he's become a bigger person because of them, so it would be harder for him to go back to being alone now.
But he realized that he could. That was something that he was always going to have.
And I have that later on. I'm just going straight down my notes because I don't remember what I wrote. So I have a note on that too. My next one is both Kanan and Grande are playing to Ezra's doubts. Vision Kanan showed up when Ezra was trying to figure out a path instead of letting Ezra find his own way. Ezra relies so much on Kanan that it led him to a quote-unquote trap. And Vision Grande is playing to Ezra's doubts of not being good enough of being a Jedi at all. Okay, so it's mostly like with like Vision Kanan, is showing Ezra's reliance on Kanan. Because the whole point of this in the first place was Ezra doing this on his own. But he relies so much on Kanan that he was like, oh, thank God Kanan's here, I'll just follow him. And he went right into a trap. So then I started thinking, I wonder what Ezra's path would have been if he didn't follow Kanan in the first place and he recognized that it was a vision and he went a different way. Would the temple have rewarded him for doing that? Or also, was Ezra supposed to be tempted? So it would have Ezra was supposed to be tempted in the vision, so would it have shown him something worse? Did any of that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
See, I don't know if it works that way. I think it works like almost like, you know, a big, well, off, and I was going to say Native American, but almost any people that do like vision quests or have visions or, you know, do like go into the sweat lodge to have a vision and stuff. But in Star Wars, and it, you know, I mean, right up until Last Jedi, where it was explicitly shown, any kind of like Jedi vision, or, you know, when you go into one of those, you know, deep force places, is basically just holding a mirror up to you. So, like if something, I think Ezra's, what happens to Ezra in there can change, like, from second to second. You know, it's not like, it's prepared this vision with this scenario to play upon his weaknesses. That's sort of how the writers did it actually when they wrote it. But, you know, I think it's like so moment to moment that the Jedi Temple and the Force is just a thing that like reacts right off his feelings at the moment and then puts it together right there and just sort of runs with it, you know.
Yeah.
And it will change and mold, you know. So it's just, you know, very clear, you know, when he was after he went to the ship, you know, and started figuring out this is not, you know, I'm not really in real time and space now, that you could see things disappeared and he was back to, you know, back in the temple and like, okay. And because he was getting control of himself. So then the temple wasn't reacting to him. And the more he slipped away from that, the more stuff would happen, you know. So
yeah. My next note is, I totally forgot about the Vision Grande slaughtering the ghost crew. Like, whoa. I was surprised. And I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah, that you knew that was a vision because, boy, he took out Zeb too quickly.
Yeah.
There would have been more of a fight with Zeb there.
But it was also very, like, horrifying, like, hearing...
Creepy.
Huh?
It was creepy, just like the Dead Masters, because you just see, like, 1 foot sticking... When he's walking away, you see 1 foot, like, from someone laying on the ground.
It's Sabine.
Sabine.
And you see, like, Hera's shadow when she gets taken out, too. Like, the whole thing is just very brutal. Honestly, I think I wrote it somewhere. Maybe I wrote it in X3. And if I didn't write it in X3, I'm going to say it now. I think this is the scariest that Grande is. And it's all the Force.
Well, yeah, it should be at its scariest tier.
Yeah. And then my last note, because I said I was going to come back to this. It was either last week or maybe the week before. It was whenever we had SIBO. There was some emphasis on Ezra being alone and he was a survivor, and they really emphasized on that. But when they did it, it was presented in a negative way, because Sabine was saying that he needed to address his past and face SIBO, and Ezra was all like, no, I've always been alone. It's what made me survive, and that's what I'm here. But it was presented very negatively because Ezra was just rejecting SIBO. But here, I like that they've spun it in a very positive way. It's Ezra picking himself back up. And he's just like, I've been alone. I am a survivor. And I'm a fighter. And it's a very nice moment because, unlike a few weeks ago, it was done out of spite for SIBO. Here it's him going, I can do this. I'm strong. I'm a survivor. I can do this. And that's a moment he should be really proud of. Like, it's this Scarlett O'Hara moment of like, I'll never go hungry again. But it's true because it's him just going, I can survive this. This is not the end of the world. I'm being dramatic. And it's actually, I really like how they took the exact same thing that they did like 2 weeks ago with SIBO, but they presented it in a very different light. And it's a point of strength for Ezra. It's very nicely done.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah. But that's all I have for Act 2.
Oh, you're ready to get back to your Grande.
I just surprisingly... I just want to say I love Grande in this episode, but I surprisingly don't have a lot of notes for it because it's not really around him, because I know it's all fake.
Right, but, right.
Oh, he's so good in this episode. And then he grabs Ezra's face and he turns and I was just like, oh, grab me, Grande. Yes, sir.
Grab my face.
Yes, sir. Yes. Anyway, Act 3?
Act 3.
All right. Grande is all tempting me with his voice and his moves, but I forgot I wrote that.
Oh my.
I forgot I wrote that.
He's like Mick Jagger or something.
Ew. No. Well,
young Mick Jagger, whatever. Whatever music you young ya-ya kids listen to these days.
You like Idris Elba or Riz Ahmed or come on, use something I love. Grande is all tempting me with his voice and his moves, but with Ezra, he's trying to scare him. And he's like, you're going to be trapped forever, and you're going to die. But Ezra is focusing. He realizing that there has to be a way out of this. He has to trust his training that Kanan has given him so far. And Grande is all like, your master didn't train you. And he's like, nope. And finally, Ezra also admits his fear. He's not scared of Grande here. He's scared of being alone, and he's also scared of letting Kanan down. Boldly, he stands up in front of Grande, who, and even as the Powan draws his blade, Ezra closes his eyes, he trusts the Force, and Grande slices through him. Because this is not a video podcast, he, like, it's fake, so he doesn't actually cut Ezra in half, but it, like, goes through him, it passes through him. I feel like I just needed to say that, because if I just said Grande sliced through him, you'd be like, oh my god, Ezra's dead! He's not dead. And the vision fades, and Ezra is alone again. But then he's not alone, because we hear a very familiar voice! I, again, did not cue you. I didn't cue you for that. I'm sorry. It's Yoda!
I'm trying to do like ghost Yoda.
Oh.
I'm just gonna let you go on. I'm just gonna sit here and wait until you're done. Are you done?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Ezra opens his eyes and he sees little floating lights that Yoda saw in the final arc of season 6, where Qui-Gon is all like, hey bro, I'm in the Force now, let me guide you. And so now, Yoda has apparently learned this trick and can make lights too, and he starts to guide Ezra. And we jump back to Kanan, who is, I kind of condensed like Kanan and Ezra's parts because they were like going back and forth. We jump back to Kanan, who is getting really nervous because Ezra's been in there for a long time. He hears Yoda too, telling him that he needs to trust in Ezra. And Kanan talks with him, saying that he's unsure of himself to train Ezra. And it's not because of Ezra, because of him, Kanan, and who Kanan is. And Kanan mentions losing his way for a long time. You can read the book A New Dawn for that, because he's slutty. And Kanan decides that he won't let Ezra lose his way like he did. Meanwhile, Ezra comes to a crossroads again and doesn't know the way. And Yoda's like,
hold your hand, I literally can't, kid.
How's See, that? This is why Chris does all the Yoda impressions. So Ezra has to trust in his abilities and use the Force. And he picks a way and goes down that path. And he comes to a room, and the ceiling is very clearly a nod to a massive thing we see in season 4. So I'm going to, I know I said in the beginning of the episode, I'm going to say it again here. Spoiler warning for season 4. You can skip ahead. You got this. This is your spoiler warning starting in 3, 2, 1, now. So, on the ceiling, there's very clearly drawings of paths, and it's very clearly from the World Between Worlds. And you know what? I know I gave a spoiler warning at the beginning of the episode. If you listened this far, I'm just letting you know, it doesn't matter anymore. Yoda asks Ezra why he wants to be a Jedi. Ezra says first because Kanan said he could be one. But then he starts saying that he wants revenge on the Empire, and he wants to be powerful, and he wants to get them back for everything they've done. And Yoda's like, wow, Kanan taught you that, huh? And Ezra backtracks, saying that Kanan is awesome, and we all know this. And Ezra starts saying that he wants to be able to protect everyone, his friends and his new family. Before he found them, he only thought about himself. But now helping people, he finally feels alive. And Ezra slips into the World Between Worlds, standing in a circle as the stars stretch above him. And Yoda says that he may one day be a Jedi, and a light descends from the stars above, and it's a Kyber crystal. Back at Kanan, he looks up as the door opens and sees Ezra. And Ezra's like, you know, I feel different and the same, and I went on this trippy adventure, and all I got was this rock. And Kanan's like, you make lightsabers with that rock. And Ezra's hella excited about that. And they leave the temple and it sinks back into the ground behind them, and once again hidden away. And Ezra says that they should try and use the temple as a base, but Kanan states that all that's in there is in the past. And they hop on the Phantom and they head home. A few weeks later, the ghost crew is waiting around for Ezra to finish his lightsaber. Ezra comes out and shows Kanan the new design. And Kanan's like, it's weird looking, but you do your thing, you funky little Jedi. And Ezra lights up his new lightsaber to the sound of dramatic Star Wars music. The end.
He doesn't even, we don't even get a demonstration of what makes it different yet.
Yeah, but
I guess that's something to save for the next episode, I guess.
And there's only literally 30 seconds left in the episode, so.
Nice reference to Empire in here with Kanan saying, I don't know what I'm doing here. I don't even know what I'm doing here.
Yeah.
Which is what Luke said to Yoda in Empire.
Hmm. Yoda? Or should I say Gloda?
Oh my god.
Mmm, Yoda likes to float around as glowing balls. Mmm.
But you learned that from Qui-Gon.
Mmm. Can hang around anywhere Yoda can. Sometimes when Lady skinny dipping, Yoda just looks like reflection on water.
You gotta will and wisp those ladies.
Mmm.
Do you Glow-da. Wisp their wills? Do you wisp their wills?
Mmm. Mmm. Will they or won't they? Mmm. Glow-da knows.
I'm just gonna sit here and let you do your thing.
That's really all the notes I have, sadly enough.
All right, well, I have plenty of notes, so here we go. Actually, the first one's a question for you. So the first time you ever watched this episode, how excited were you to hear Yoda?
Oh, I love it. I love hearing Frank Oz as Yoda, too.
Yeah, that's true, because Tom Kane did Yoda in Clone Wars.
Yeah, Frank Oz as Yoda, it was jarring after hearing the Clone Wars one after a while, but I'm used to Frank Oz again because of Last Jedi. But it's a deeper voiced, he does older Yoda, you know,
mm-hmm.
more when Frank Oz does it these days, because he's also older Frank Oz, too. I mean, let's face it. But it's always good hearing the original again. Like, we got to hear the original Darth Vader. You know, we got to hear James Earl Jones doing his thing at the beginning of this season. So it was really cool. I was very excited of hearing Frank Oz doing Yoda, as it should be. Frank Oz is alive. It's not like he's doing any Muppet shows or Muppet movies. Why can't he just go and do Yoda for, you know, the voice of Yoda? How long would that take him?
Like, an afternoon.
Exactly. So I'm, you know, it should always be Frank Oz, I think.
Yeah. So my next point is kind of like a huh moment. Because a few weeks ago, the moment that Kanan heard that Luminara was possibly alive, like, he obsessed over finding Luminara. But it made me wonder, why didn't Kanan start trying to find Yoda after this episode just to have another Jedi around?
Yoda's kind of big time. It's like sort of like if Yoda wanted you to find him, you know. Luminara, yeah. I would think of being more like in the same boat as Kanan, whereas Yoda is like, he's a Jedi, you know, he's a big time. He's the like one of the Elvises of Jedis, or one of the Elvises, the Elvis of Jedis. So, like, it's like, He's only gonna go looking for and find Yoda if Yoda wants him to go looking for him and find him.
Yeah. I also thought of it in two other ways. Because for one, I thought, like, Kanan probably learned from the Luminara thing. Like, because that was also a big reason why he... Because the big reason he wanted to find Luminara in the first place, because he wanted her to train Ezra. But he's taken on that role now. But it was also a trap and he's learned from it. And the other thing is Kanan is very aware that Yoda was a very powerful Jedi. And so I'm sure he just rationalized, like, oh, I'm just hearing his voice. He's not actually here. So he's like, it's probably through the Force and he's dead.
And also, who knows? Maybe he did try to find Yoda, you know, after this at some point, and just was like, and Yoda, I'm imagining Yoda really doesn't want to be found by anybody at this point.
Yeah. My next points all have to do with Kanan, because to me, Kanan was probably one of the most fascinating points of this episode. How relieved do you think Kanan felt just hearing a voice from his past when he thought everyone else was gone? Like, that just had to be, like, just such a huge moment for him.
Yeah, but at the same time, do you think he was doubting it a little bit since they were in the temple, so it could be, like...
Another vision?
Yeah, another vision, like, you know, but they like had the vision general, of Mark, like, the Jedi that Mark Hamill plays, Sifo Dyas, you know.
Yeah. I mean, like, but just like in general, just like, because he hasn't heard any voices from his past for like, what, like 15 years now?
Yeah.
And just to hear that, I bet it's just like when you haven't, when you haven't heard someone's voice and you go, like, you haven't, like, you know, someone close to you passes
how
away.
How close
and
was he to Yoda, do you think? Well, I guess he was trained by him at some point.
He was. We know that. But it's I kind of think of it as, like, you have a relative pass away and it's been several years and you find, like, an old videotape of them and you watch it. And, like, so I, it's just that I'm sure that's, like, just such a moment.
And then the video tape starts talking to you.
No, this is no. Nice moment over. I'm moving on. But that's kind of how I thought of it. So, what, okay, give me a second. I really don't remember my notes. Okay, so this has to go with the line where Yoda tells Kanan, "Oh, you're a master now," and he has kind of like a joking tone to it. And so there's been a lot of debate, especially around Rebels when Rebels was coming out. And I remember this debate popping up a lot about Kanan and Ezra being around in this time period when Yoda told Luke in the original trilogy that he was the last Jedi. Of course, we know that Kanan never made it there, but we know that Ezra is still around. But we know that that's not the case anymore because there are other Force users in the galaxy we've seen. We know that Rey is out there. We know that that tiny like child is at the stables and stuff. So we know that they can't possibly be the only Force users around. But do you think that this isn't the case anymore? Or it's just like a technical term now? Because Yoda was saying that he's the last Jedi and he's dismissive towards Kanan calling himself a master. But do you think when he said that to Luke, he's saying it in a way of, you're the last Jedi being trained in this old way?
Yeah, it's like the last time. It's a we're not giving out that title anymore.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean there's not going to be Force users who use Jedi ways or whatever. But it's not the, you know, it's not going to be the same, you know. The Master Padawan thing might not always be, you know, there might be similar, the teacher-master relationship might be different, you know. It might be non-existent. It was barely there for Luke or Rey, you know.
Yeah.
They just spent, like, basically, like, Luke basically spent a short road trip with Obi-Wan Kenobi. And wasn't trained by anybody after that. And, you know, how long was Rey with Luke? Like a day, 2 days, 3 days, something like that, you know, a long weekend. So
it's kind of like that joke from Robot Chicken when they had a Star Wars special. And it's around the scene in the movie after Obi-Wan died, like Leia puts the blanket around Luke. But in the Robot Chicken special, she goes, "Oh, did the old man that you knew for a day die? I'm sorry, my planet got blown up."
Yeah, and I mean, how much training did he get from Yoda? You know, however long it took Han and Leia to fly to see Lando, you know.
Time is so weird in Star Wars. Like Megan has a theory where it should be called Weekend Wars. Where every movie takes place over the course, like, or every, yeah, like, takes place over the course of a weekend. Because in Last Jedi, it seems like it's only been a few days since Force Awakens, and, like, they've just been running for, like 5 hours. But with Rey, it seems like she was there for, like, a week. So, like, the time is so weird, how it's presented.
Yeah, no, she was only with Luke for the length of the chase of, you know, the First Order chasing
Rebels.
That's what
I'm saying. Like, the chase doesn't feel like it was very long. Like, maybe, like, a handful of hours. But she seems like, with Luke, she was there for at least a day or two.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think I can't remember how long they state they have. They only have so many hours of fuel for their chase.
Yeah.
At some point. So that limits the amount of time of it. But it's a very short amount of time. Luke really got the most training of them because Yoda had him, you know, balancing rocks and stuff and took him, you know, to the tree. Although Rey kind of took herself to the tree and to the hole in the ground. So It's maybe the four, you know, the Last Jedi means there's just not going to be that, you know, people are going to sort of be feeling their way and yeah. having, you know, some other people to give them advice and stuff. But it's not going to be like, let me take you through this rote series of things and go get your Kyber crystal and all that, you know. We'll see.
Yeah. And the last note I have about Kanan and Yoda, there's one that really stuck out to me, which was Kanan talking about himself, because he said that he was doubting training Ezra because, as I quote, he doubts who he, Kanan, as a person is. And that was an odd line to me, because it's one thing if he doubts his own abilities. That makes sense. He was never a fully trained Jedi. We've seen that so far in the show, that he doubts himself training Ezra because he was never a full Jedi himself. But here, Kanan is talking about himself as a person, talking about his own path. We talk about it in the New Dawn that he was a slutty jerk.
He's been living as a civilian.
What?
He's been living as a civilian.
Yeah.
And hey, come on, don't judge him just because the guy's a sensualist.
Yeah, but I also have to wonder if it goes back to this whole like new Jedi thing with attachments, because we know that Kanan has attachments for people like Hera. We know this. And this seems to be kind of like a signifying stance on these new Jedi. Luke chooses to go save his friends. Ezra, we'll see in the future, makes choices for his family and friends. Kanan is attached to has attachments for Hera and his family. So I kind of liked that when Kanan was like, it was almost kind of like a moment where he was addressing himself, like not only his past being a slut, but I just like calling. There's an artist I love called Juicy Space Secrets, and she just does the best Fulcrum comics of Cassian, Callus, and Ahsoka hanging out. But she just recently did one where Jacen Syndulla, Kanan and Hera's son, goes back in the past, and it's a movie poster that says, "I'm Jacen Syndulla from the future, and I have to stop my father from slutting his way across the galaxy." She just made that the other day, so it's very fresh on my mind because it makes me laugh. But what was the point I was making? Sorry.
It was about attachments. I think,
like a signal like of him, like, you know, addressing his path, like, I went down this dark road. But it's also a signal of these, like, new Jedi, like, we're not going to be traditional. We're not going to follow this dogmatic code. And he's pretty much saying that to Yoda, like, we're making our new path now.
Well,
and Yoda kind of gives his blessing.
Well, because then don't you think Yoda learned his lesson when he was such a dick to Anakin about attachments?
Yeah.
Remember, he's like, you're just going to have to let him die, maybe, you know, Yoda and just was kind of like, yeah, bury him deep, bury those feelings deep and blah, blah, blah. And it kind of backfired on him.
And we also know that Yoda has kind of accepted this, too, because he tried to burn the fucking books. The ancient texts.
Yoda didn't try to burn the books. He knew what was going on. That was all for Luke's benefit. That was just all a show for so Luke could let go of the books. But Yoda knew where those books were.
Yeah.
As much as said it to Luke.
I'm also. Everything. There's a great image of it's like when you're making macaroni and cheese in the microwave and you realize you've already thrown away the box, and under it has a picture of Luke going, "The ancient texts." Anyway, so yeah, I mean, I think I like that line where Kanan was just like, I don't want him to be like me, adjusting his own path, but also kind of signaling like, hey, we're gonna be new Jedi now. It's so much fun.
Who's gonna stop him? Also,
that's true. Yoda's gonna come out of the swamp to smack him in the head, just like Paul exactly. C. Kelly's question. It's also. Master Yoda, why? It's also just really fun going back and seeing the world between worlds, like now that we know what it is. Like, we know where Ezra is. He's in the world between worlds, but it's on such a smaller scale, because we know, like, later in season 4, Ezra will go back and he'll see, like, the big massive thing and all of its things. But it's nice because what we're seeing right now is based on Ezra's ability. He's just seeing the smallest, tiniest piece of that realm. And But it's all based on his abilities. He doesn't have the hindsight to see it more. And in season two, we'll get to see like a little bit more. And so it's bigger. And we're going to see like that and see his abilities grow. So I like that the world between worlds is also like a symbol of Ezra's abilities and like kind of like a touchstone of like, these are the places he is right now. So I like that it's presented that way. And also like just some of the imagery, like, because when he looks at the ceiling, we see the paths that we'll see in season four. So there's like a lot of nice hints that's leading into season four that they set up here, but it's all done really well. And it's just really pretty, him standing in the circle and there's stars everywhere. It's really pretty. I love how it's presented.
I agree.
Wow, I pretty much covered my next point already by talking about Kanan, so I'm just going to read it right fast. Kanan says that the past is in the temple because it sinks and he's like, oh, it's in the past. This is very telling with the episode came out and what was happening. This is not my same point. This episode came out pre-Force Awakens. And we've already said in these early episodes that back when we were covering Clone Wars, that the new Jedi are so very different from their predecessors in the Republic. Yoda, Obi-Wan, and them are a part of the past. But with this new era of the Jedi, they were going to forge something new from their journeys. And so I thought that was a very telling line when Kanan said that it was in the past, because this came out pre-Force Awakens, we hadn't seen Rey. We hadn't seen old Luke. We haven't seen all that yet. So this is really what we had, our first glimpse of these new Jedi. So I kind of like that line of Kanan going, all that, the temple and Yoda and all that, it's in the past. And I feel like that was a Dave Filoni line of going, we're doing something new. This is new Star Wars. Force Awakens is going to be new. Last Jedi is going to be new. We're going in this direction. And it was all in this one line where Kanan goes, the temple and Yoda and all that is in the past.
Yeah. They had to be really subtle about it, though, you know?
Yeah, it's not like Kanan looked at the screen and winked.
Yeah, it shows up a lot more in hindsight.
Yeah.
And two very movies much so. In.
Which is why we wanted to cover Rebels like this. So, I love that Ezra builds his lightsaber from things that his family gives him. Because each of them were like, oh, Chopper gave him this part, and Hera gave him this part, and Sabine and Kanan and Zeb, they all gave him parts. And he got all these pieces and parts from around the Ghost. So I liked that, because when he built this lightsaber, it's part of, like, it was all from parts of his family. And now it's whole, just like him. And I was like, it's a symbol.
It's like the coat of many colors.
I know. And finally, my last note. I kind of mentioned this earlier. I find this episode a touch predictable, but again, it's not in a bad way. These are all things that Ezra has to face. But where I think this episode really, really, really thrives is Kanan's stories. I think Kanan is actually the much more kind of better through line in this episode. And as I said, while it was a dream, this is probably the scariest we've ever seen the Inquisitor in the entire series, like any of the Inquisitors. This is when he's at his scariest. So, yeah. Though I was thinking about it. I was wondering if this episode took place later in like season two, after we've met Vader, if Vader would have been in the Inquisitor's place, because as of right now, the Inquisitor is the scariest thing that Ezra has seen, you know? So well, like, that to him is like, fear.
When I'm first watching this, I'm just like, okay, the Inquisitor is a Darth Vader stand-in for this, you know. You've got, like, the Chewbacca stand-in, the Luke stand-in, and composite Han Solo, Obi-Wan stand-in, sort of. And I'm not saying this in a negative way. That was just sort of how I figured they worked up the dynamic for this show. And the Inquisitor was going to be the Dark Force user that was not Darth Vader, and I figured it was all for, you know, reasons of story continuity with the movies and stuff that we didn't know about. So that's why these characters were like the way they were. That was, you know,
yeah,
the first time through.
But I do have to wonder if this episode, I'm glad, for one, I'm happy it took place when it did. So Ezra actually has a lightsaber. But if he had seen something else that was scarier like Vader, I'd have to wonder if Vader would have been in that place, because Vader, as of right now, like,
too much.
Yeah, because as of right now, like, the Inquisitor is Ezra's only point of reference of something that's really truly scary for him.
Right. They've run into the Inquisitor before, so, and just recently. So, you know, whereas Darth Vader, I don't know if he even knows what a Darth Vader is, you know.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, if this had taken place in, like, season two, after he had met Vader.
Right, right.
That's the thing I'm making. I was smiling because I was like, of course Grande is so much better than Vader. He actually has a dick.
You can see his facial expressions. Jesus, Hope. Wow.
Okay. Did I tell you, me and Megan, I don't think I told you this, me and Megan actually had a very thorough discussion of what Grande's dick would look like.
Yeah, I heard.
No, I think I told you about Thrawn's dick. We had a very thorough discussion about Thrawn's dick.
Oh, Grande's dick. Oh, okay.
Grande's dick.
Grande's dick looks like a gas, like a nozzle of a gas pump.
No. Do you want to hear our conclusions or not? You can say no.
Oh, no. We got to hear your conclusions. If you brought it up, you're not getting out of the show without giving the conclusions.
So me and Megan were debating of what his dick would look like. It actually came up in a very funny scene.
Because that's what you guys do.
This is what we do. And it actually came up in a very funny scene of our role play where the context was Thrawn was away. So my character Kaya was having, Thrawn was away for like 9 months or something. And Kaya was having problems. Kaya is my character. And she starts having an affair with Grande. And so she goes and she's like, I can't have this affair. I'm married. So she goes into a sex store because she's like trying to like figure out how not to have like this like passion for Grande. And do you remember Eli Vanto? He was Thrawn's friend in the Thrawn novel.
Yes.
Eli's with her and she drags Eli with him. And Eli's like, why the fuck am I here? And she starts seeing these like blue palin dicks and she starts sobbing because she misses Thrawn so much. So she's sitting in the middle of a sex store holding a blue dildo, sobbing over it because she misses Thrawn.
Oh, my.
Me and Megan just start dying laughing because it's the saddest, funniest thing in the fucking world. It's so sad and funny. But anyway, so we started describing, like, trying to figure out what, like, Grande's dick would look like. And we've decided that Powans, if you look at them, not in animation, because Powans actually really look like monsters. We call them Nosferatus, me and Megan, because they look like a Nosferatu monster. Just Google it. Look up a Powan. They look like Nosferatus. Grande is the only sexy-looking one, because Powans as a whole look like nightmares. But they have lines that go down their face. They have the lines that are imprinted on their body. And so we came to the conclusion that it would be ribbed because he has the lines on his body.
That's what I'm saying. What the hell is his name from the X-Men from Deadpool?
Colossus?
The Russian guy.
Colossus,
yes.
Yeah.
It would be like like the nozzle of a gas pump. It's sort of that ribbed, flexible metal, you know.
Oh, it's not flexible when it's going. Anyway, that's our conclusion. So I don't have any other notes, Chris. What do you think of the episode?
I gave it an 8 out of 10. Hey. It probably, frankly, would have gotten about if old Glota didn't show up. It probably would have gotten about a 7.5 because it's not bad, but it's just sort of puts it in that sort of we've sort of seen this story before, and it's sort of I have a feeling this might be like what my original like complaints with the, like a few episodes before when I thought it was going to be the whole show was like that this just sort of follows a little adventure pattern and stuff like that. But solid show, some really nice visuals and nice music in it. So 8 out of 10.
Actually, I have a question for you. Now that we know from season 4 what the world between worlds is, do you think it's cool that we're seeing it on a smaller scale this early on?
Oh, yeah. That just means that they'd had this thing way more thought through than we thought in the beginning.
I feel like the exact same way, too. For me, I also gave it an 8 out of 10. We tied this week.
Yeah, I think we did last week, too.
Yeah, actually, no, I was way higher because it had the sex scene.
Oh, you're right, you're right.
At the sexy fighting scene, I was far higher than you.
You're right, I think it was a week before. Oh, well.
But I like this episode. While it was a bit predictable and it's stuff that we've seen before, it's really well done. We do get the first look at the world between worlds, which is cool now that we know what it is. But while Ezra's story was tailored to him and stuff like that, and it was very predictable, I just really loved what they did with Kanan. I liked Kanan's story. I liked how he had to face his past and his insecurities. And we've seen this before, but it was done slightly different ways because now he's facing it in front of Yoda. And there's just a lot of great visuals. And, you know, I just love my Grande. So I also gave it an 8 out of 10.
Oh, yeah. It was Grande porn in this because it's not even Grande. It's like the exaggerated, like all the grande concentrated in one scene, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he gets to win too, you know, in a force vision. So it was all the grande porn was there for Hope.
Loved it.
All the grande porn that you're actually gonna get on a Disney cartoon show.
I love it. Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. Especially on iTunes, because when you write and review our show, it helps people find the show. So make sure you hit us up there if you haven't. This week, our feedback comes from Two True Freaks Facebook page for our episode covering Rise of the Old Masters. Take it away, Chris.
All right. Okay, we got one of two.
From Aaron Henley.
One of two from Aaron Henley, yes. He said, this is one of the best episodes of early season one. The final fate of Luminara, the Grand Inquisitor showing how much of a threat he is. Little subplot with Senator Lore, Data, giving the truth to the galaxy and totally not trying to lead some rebels into a trap. No, sir.
Oh, just to say, truth is in quotations.
Quote, unquote, truth. Just an FYI, there was some weird reverb on Chris's end this episode. Yes, there was.
Yes, we have hopefully figured out all of our sound problems that we had in the beginning of Rebels. So
Skype has been a harsh mistress, and I think Skype has been sort of getting their act together a little bit lately, and we've been getting some better recordings lately. Yes, I think that episode was the one where we had connection problems. I think we recorded it in like three parts. We kept calling each other back.
Yeah, and it was also the one that we were both sick.
We were both sick, and when I put it together, I had to sort of cobble it together from both of our recordings, which were both in three parts. So it was a complicated edit, but yes, hopefully we'll be avoiding that weird reverb in the future. Okay, we got another one from Aaron that says, I agree with Chris. All right, let's just stop right there and say those are the best four words that you can start a bit of feedback with at J Guys and Jedi. Okay, well gone. I agree with Chris that the spinning lightsaber is more intimidating than useful, but then I just think about this period in time. It's doubtful the Inquisitors are called out much for Jedi killing at this time, so I imagine they were called out for threats that didn't require Vader's personal attention, which we see in season two. So the spinning blade would be an effective shield against blaster bolts and more widely used weaponry. Also, it would scare the hell out of the local rubes, you know?
Yeah. I have a note about this. Yes, at this time, that is true. Because we know in the Darth Vader comics that takes place before this, they've killed almost all the Jedi. So there's really nothing left to hunt.
Yeah,
so by the time that Rebels takes place, they pretty much have killed all the Jedi. So yeah,
they're
right
there to be scary as hell, mm-hmm. basically. And Vader's there to be scary as hell and get the job done when it absolutely positively has to be done. All right. Anyway, on with Aaron's note. My theory on the number names of the first brother, seventh sister meant that there was a certain number of potential Inquisitor cadets. And the ones we see are the ones who survived through graduation. We never even know their names, just number and gender. Just as the Empire dehumanized the clone troopers with unit colors and personalities into blank stormtroopers recruited from across the galaxy into faceless enemies, they dehumanized these guys as well. Thanks, Chris. That's the second best sentence to start out a bit of feedback for, for Jake as a Jedi. Thanks, Chris, for reminding about the helicopter saber moment. Yeah, you're welcome. Star Wars can be silly and great, but that is just one step too far.
You know,
that one didn't get me as bad as a lot of other people, but I'll just say this, I'm not fond of it.
I actually like it until you think about it, because I was having this talk with Megan too. It was like, it's not like they give off heat or anything. So how do they lift and rise?
When they talk about that sort of gyroscopic light aspect of it, and that you had to really like, it didn't just like fling around like you would fling something. There was some force behind it, that maybe there'd be some physics behind it, but still, it's too on the nose. You know, it's too kind of obvious.
I still don't mind it. I think visually it's cool. I liked it when it was just, I forget which brother it is, but in Twilight of the Apprentice, the first time we really saw it was the brother doing that. That one brother that showed up only in that episode. So I liked what you had said, like, if that had just been his ability, like, that's what he could do, that's one thing. But the fact that all three of them can do it, that was, like, a touch of a step too far. But I also kind of like it. Especially like when I read, I forgot where, maybe it was a Rebels recon, where the Inquisitor's lightsabers are actually cheating lightsabers because they're not as skilled as someone like Maul. So they have to have spinning lightsabers to fight someone like Maul because they're not as skilled. So, I mean, I still like it, but I also fully recognize that it is ridiculous, but I like it, so. All right.
Candy time.
Candy time. Well, if you don't know what we're doing... Chris hates American Kit Kats because he's stupid. I can't open this and read it at the same time. So our friend Dario...
Oh, yes, listen, I just want to get the satisfying sound of the tear-off cardboard zipper.
So our friend Dario sends us candy from all over the world to review because Chris hates American Kit Kats. And this week we have the... Cacao 73 from Japan. And it's from Japan. So, as always, thank you, Dario. Oh, and Dario is also Chris's co-podcaster for Eat It and Beat It. So, you can check him out there.
Ooh,
it smells like dark chocolate.
It's dark chocolate, and there's a picture of a nut on the cover.
So oh, it's hard.
It doesn't look... I can't tell what the nut is. It's not almond.
I'm
having a hard time tearing mine open.
It's almost just a bar of dark chocolate, straight up.
That's okay. I might have to get my knife out here. There, now you'll open up, won't ya? Yeah. All right.
Mm. It's straight up a bar of dark chocolate because it looks like there's supposed to be nuts on the inside, but I don't taste any or see any.
There's just teeny tiny little dots. Mmm, I love dark chocolate. So I'm guessing it's 73%. I can sort of not taste the nuts, but I can sort of feel it when I'm chewing them up.
My mouth. Yeah, it's hard dark chocolate too, so it's not very solid.
Mm. Oh, leave it on your tongue for a few seconds and it starts to get mushy.
Well, as always, thank you, Daria. We love you. Well, that's all I have for this episode.
Dario's about falling asleep right now.
Well, Dario,
appreciate this. The stick that I use for Yoda's whacking stick is King Richard. Dario knows what I'm talking about.
I was wondering what
Dario,
that was.
Dario, wake up. Wake up. Time to get up. Time to wake up. Wake up.
That sound could also be used for Eat It and Beat It. Just the...
Exactly.
That's a very Eat It and Beat It sound.
You don't know how right you are, Hope.
Well, where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at tutufreaks.com, which I'm going to pop up here because... It's a complicated name, and I want to make sure it's right. We just got added a new show. We added a couple new shows. We've got the Ranger Chronicles, which is a Charlie Niemeyer show on the Power Rangers. And we've got With Umbrella, Charm, and Bowler, that other Avengers podcast. which is the long-awaited podcast. People have been waiting years for Thomas DJ to do a podcast on his favorite TV show ever, The Avengers, and he's doing it with Scott McGregor, who is sort of the neophyte who's going to go, and they're gonna pull a Jay Guys and Jedi and go through the entire run of The Avengers, which was a long time. So that's our newest show. You can also find us on Twitter, where we have a Twitter feed run by the legendary Gene, the podcasting machine. He and Daria, both of them, we know are guaranteed to be listening right now. Gene has to, because he has to hear them all. Like, two true freaks are his Pokemon. We also are on Facebook, where we have a Two True Freaks Facebook page, which is basically to post up whatever new shows are and to talk about those specific shows. And then if you want to talk about something else, you can go to the Two True Freaks Cantina. So join up to them, meet all the wonderful people there, and participate in the scintillating conversation. Where can they find you, Hope?
You can find me at Jago. Actually, before I get into this, I just want to say something. So you remember a few weeks ago when I was pimping my friend's podcast, Roll to Fail?
Uh-huh.
I actually got somebody to listen to. It was Dr. Bill Robinson.
Yay, good.
Bill Robinson messaged me the other day, and he was like, thank you so much for suggesting Roll to Fail to me. I've listened to the entire thing in a week. It's amazing. I can say that it's amazing because I was listening to it too earlier today. I'm working my way through it as well. So if you want, and I was slightly wrong, because like my idea when I hear this podcast is that it's Dungeons & Dragons. They're playing Starfinder, which is like D&D or Pathfinder in space. So if you're, and they make a lot of Star Wars references too, which makes it kind of relevant to our podcast. So guys, if I can make a podcast recommendation, Gene, if you need a new podcast, go listen to Roll to Fail, you guys, because it's wonderful. Tell them that Hope sent you. You're going to love it. It's so much fun. I laugh every episode. I cry sometimes. It's just so fucking good.
Well, Bill Robinson is the Mikey of podcasters, of podcast consumers.
Yeah, so, well, I don't know what you mean.
Let Dr. Bill try it. He won't listen to it. He hates everything.
I don't know what you mean by the Mikey.
Well, you're too young to remember the Mikey ads, but Dr. Bill isn't.
Is that the one they're like, hey, Mikey, he likes it?
Yes, it is.
Ah,
and then there were the rumors that Mikey, his stomach blew up because he ate Pop Rocks and then drank Pepsi. But it's not true. Mikey's alive and well, so.
Yeah. But just to say, he wrote me, like, anyway, I just wanted to say I've been really enjoying Rebels coverage, and thanks for mentioning Roll to Fail. I listened all the way through to present day and in about a week's time. And so yeah, guys, like, go check out Roll to Fail if you're looking for a great, like, fun, like, podcast. You're going to laugh. It's amazing. So please go check it out, because I'm just absolutely in love with those guys. I can't recommend it enough. I was listening to it today at work. It's so much fun. So please go listen to Roll to Fail, guys. It's just a lot of fun.
Yeah, but it's good to laugh your ass off, basically.
Oh, it's so funny. Like, right now, I'm listening to an episode called Gravthrax Puzzle Basement, where Callie has sent them into a dungeon, which is made for them because they're all fucking idiots. So they, like, literally pick up an episode called, like, The Idiot's Guide to Blinding You, but they don't know it's that, so they all get blinded, and Callie, who's the GM, like, she's just laughing her ass off at them because she specifically designed it because all their characters are fucking idiots. So Callie's just being a mean old bitch right now, and it's hilarious because there's a guy named Parker, and he plays Sunny, and Sunny is just, like, the adorable dumb human, and he is just like, it's a dungeon! We gotta speed run it! Because he's from, like, Earth, our time, but he's, like, 2,000 years old because he, like, went into cryogenic freezing as traveling. So he's, like, 2,000, but he's from our time. So he's like, we gotta speed run it, like, Sonic the Hedgehog. And, like, he runs in, and they're like, Sonny, no! And then shit happens, and they're like, oh, fucking Sonny.
Leroy Jenkins.
Pretty much, yeah. He's Leroy Jenkins, trying to Leroy Jenkins this thing, and it's just, it's hilarious because they're all idiots, and I love them all, and it's just really great. And like, what I also really like is they do out of character episodes where they just like sit and they talk about themselves and the gameplay, so you actually really get to know the cast. I started listening because my buddy Jess is on it, and they were like, hey, you know, hope I think you'd really like this podcast. And I was like, okay, Jess, I'll try to give it a hand. And like, now I'm texting them and I'm like, Jess, it's amazing. And it's also very unique because Jess is non-binary, so their character uses they them pronouns, and Callie is a transgendered woman. And so like, it's really fun having a very like LGBT podcast, but they're just doing stupid things like playing Starfinder. It's not like a very special episode of a podcast. They're just normal people doing special, like just stupid things. And that's what I like about it, because like a lot of times when you get like LGBT podcasts, it's like, this is a very special episode of this. Nah, it's just a group of friends getting around and like derping their way through stupid ass dungeons. And so I love it. So I can't recommend Roll to Fail enough, guys. It's so good. Please go listen to it. But for me, where can you find me? You can find me at JGuysAndJedi. I run our Twitter account. I'm actually in the process of working on something because my buddy Jonna Marie from Rebels Chat, and this episode might be out by then. I don't know where we are because I know we're a few weeks ahead. But my buddy Jonna Marie has decided to do a thing called Rebels Remembered, because I can't believe this, but Rebels ended a year ago. It feels like it was fucking forever ago, but it ended a year ago on March 5th. So for the 1 year anniversary of Rebels ending, she decided to do this thing called Rebels Remembered. So I've been really pushing that on our JGuys and Jedi account, because I think it's a really cool idea, and plus we're doing Rebels right now.
Yeah,
we're doing Rebels, so this is like very relevant for us. But on my website, Geeky Girl Experience, I'm working on a blog where I'm looking back at Rebels and I'm writing about it and I'm talking about our podcast and stuff like that. It's going to take me a month to write, so I'm glad she announced it a month early, because it's going to take me a month to write this. So that's what I'm working on for geekgirlexperience.com. My normal Twitter is Hope Molinax. I had to think about that because I'm trying to do three things at once. So JGuys and Jedi, Hope Molinax, Twitter. I recently wrote on Geeky Girl Experience a new blog called Not Everything in Star Wars Needs to Be a Death Star. And what that means is that one of the reasons I love the television shows so much is because we can have much smaller stories, and it's not like the movies where everything's dialed up to 11 because there's a Death Star or Star Killer base. So it's me just talking about like why I love the Filoniverse so much. But keep an eye out for my Rebels Remembered blog, because that's coming. I'm also a fanfiction writer on Archive of Our Own. My main story is Forces of Gravity. It's a Thrawn fanfiction. I beta read Valkyrie Strike for Megan, and it's also a Thrawn fanfiction. But Chris, I started a brand new fanfiction. It's going to be a very short story.
Oh dear.
But can I tell you about the stupid ass premise?
You can tell me about the stupid ass premise.
So the premise of this new story is there's a pop band of Twi'lek boys. It's a Twi'lek boy band called the Lucky Leku. And they are a Twi'lek boy band, and they're so wildly popular that the Empire can't touch them. So they can, like, because, like, if something happened to these boys, they, like, half the fucking galaxy would riot, because it's, like, think NSYNC or Backstreet Boys. Like, they're that wildly popular, like, in the 90s. And so, but one of, like, they're, what, somewhere within the Lucky Leku and this boy band, either one of them or their staff is a rebel spy. So a Kallus has to infiltrate a boy band to find the fucking rebel spy. This is the stupid goddamn story I started.
I'm not going to disagree with you on that.
Yeah, because I talked about it a few weeks ago. It's like, you know, I wish there was more artists in Star Wars. I don't know if you're familiar with Hunger Games.
Yes, I am familiar with Hunger Games.
There's the character of Senna. He's a fashion designer, and he hides his anti-government messages in his clothes, and that's just such a cool idea to me. So that was kind of, like, the idea I had is, like, this boy band is using, like, their pop music to, like, to speak out for people and to speak out against the Empire, but, like, one of them is actually a rebel spy. So now Kallus has to infiltrate a boy band. so that's my new story I started. It's called The Lucky Lucky. It's on AO3. You can check it out. It's an archive of our own. Check it out there. So, The Lucky Lucky. That's what I started this week, too. Shut up, Chris. I know. It's dumb, yeah. But I love it. But that's all I have. What are we doing next week? What's next week's episode?
Another episode? I have no idea.
I don't have any idea either. I'm looking right now. Well, next week we're doing... Oh, next week we have a nice special appearance by Mr. Billy D. Williams.
Oh, I like this one. I like this one.
I'm actually really excited about seeing this one because I remember...
After seeing Solo?
Huh?
After seeing Solo?
No, it's just originally I wasn't a big fan of this episode. But a lot of it is because, like, you know, I talked on it before, like, the original trilogy is not my most favorite time of Star Wars. But after seeing Solo and, like, after stuff like that, I think I'm going to appreciate it a lot more. So, yeah, next week is the Lando episode. Ooh, that's
cool. I like this one a lot. Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
All right, you guys. Well, we will see you next week.
I'll see you in hell. Yeah.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Hunting.